This is Get Lit with Literature, and this is Monk. There's more at the website allbook-books.com. And please consider a contribution on the Get Lit with Literature page. And or subscribing to Musings from Between the Lines for the most recent poems and essays. You can subscribe for free, or again, you can chip in a few of the waning U.S. dollars system paperwork or whatever digitized, which brings us to part three of Scorched Earth, Beyond the Digital Age to a Post-Capitalist World, verso Jonathan Crary. A very dense book. I'm up to page, the second chapter goes up to page 85. And again, lots of underlines and highlights and such like. He does have several mentions of the indigenous people, talking about a glacier that was a Euro-American name in the 1850s following the violent expropriation of the Yosemite Valley from its indigenous inhabitants. So he, Crary calls it the Internet Complex, and I would add to that it is part and parcel of the MIC, Military-Industrial Complex, and the whole entertainment complex system. Because, in fact, a lot of the gadgetry technology is first developed by the Department of Defense with taxpayer dollars, and then it is so kindly made available to the average citizen who can excitedly then pay for it twice. So that's part of the capitalist, 24/7 capitalist industrial internet complex that he is talking about. And one of my favorite summaries is the etymology of the word distract, away from tracts of land and water. And that's what he describes with this. Economic modernization required the earth and its structures to become distant and objectified, like a landscape painting to contemplate and study, but at the same time, its seemingly infinite reserve of resources had to remain directly accessible for exploitation and the acquisition of wealth. So that's a main theme of this chapter, is the billionaire class and how that affects the corporations and the individuals, how that affects and basically rules the internet. And also that it is socially and spiritually and physically distracting people from caring for the land and water and the air and all the relations from whence the materials come to produce and maintain the whole technologic system. But as long as we conceive of our task as the staving off of an impending, in italics, planetary catastrophe, we fail to understand, as Walter Benjamin and many others have said, that the real catastrophe is the perpetuation of the way things are and have been, of all the forms of imperial violence, economic injustice, racial and sexual terror, and ecological ravagement. It's a moment when the continuities and habituations of the present need to be disrupted, and when gradualism in political praxis is no longer an option. This is a call to action. As I see it, he's making that call to action. Wake up and smell the digital coffee. At this unique historical crossroads, the evocation of catastrophe is increasingly appropriated as a weapon of corporate and military power and their techno-modernist mouthpieces. Often, the same authorities who insist on the permanence of the global institutions and 24/7 networks of the digital age are also the ones posing global warming as a crisis so huge that the only solution is carbon capture geoengineering, requiring efforts on a scale much greater than the Manhattan Project. And he has, like again, I said, lots of excellent phrases. He calls it terminal capitalism. And that's, you know, it's resources, as people say, it's a finite resources. And again, commenting on insightfully on the social effects, elements of presentism include all the technological innovations designed to abolish time or function in real time, which privilege the now and foster the illusion of instantaneity and immediate availability. That every service or product should be accessible on demand presupposes a reality unmoored from spatial, material, or temporal constraints. The French-Hungarian socialist Joseph Gabel in the 1960s described how capitalism depends on a negation of historical time and a positing of, quote, progress as a quantitative succession of present moments that maintains existing social and economic arrangements. The privileged system is considered as perfect and extratemporal and therefore as immune to radical or qualitative transformation. In a reified technocratic society, Gabel wrote, history can never be understood as the expression of creativity and spontaneity. Consequently, the undeniable fact of change forces itself on this consciousness of immediacy as a catastrophe. And he cites the significance of post-World War II when American corporations, with their imperial ambitions, began to dominate. 1946 is when the dominant articulations of collective expectations became restricted to official experts, think tanks, economic forecasters, and best-selling gurus. The scientific, the technological progress coinciding with a range of new tech tasks for post-war consumers. In part, the arrival of the atomic age with its new forms of global terror and mass death had to be repackaged and domesticated into promises of increasing abundance and leisure enabled by, quote, clean nuclear energy, automation, blinking IBM mainframes, and a host of other alleged advances. And he goes on to reference, you know, sci-fi writers and other writers talking about the shift. Unipolar planet of market democracies. Equally significant were the events of 1989 to 91, although the suddenness with which they unfolded had different consequences, talking about the implosion of the Soviet Union. And then he's talking about another philosopher, Gunther Anders, writing in the 1950s, outlined how the telos, T-E-L-O-S, of modern technological culture was the installation of, quote, a world without us, end quote. He did not mean the disappearance of people, rather the encroachment of autonomous systems that render obsolete any decision-making based on the needs of human communities. Luis Suarez Villa has outlined how 21st century corporations are transforming the whole of society into a vast experimental laboratory to drive the agenda of techno-capitalism, namely, quote, to conquer and colonize most every aspect of human existence and nature itself. Now that's been recently reported. I heard that interview on First Voices Radio with Teokas and Ghost Horse interviewing a woman talking about how Wall Street is looking to monetize and capitalize, commodify, like all of nature and Mother Earth. So that is a frightening prospect which needs to be squashed. Banking and finance, security and intelligence agencies, and the military. So again, that whole package deal of the internet complex, which he again mentions global dominance and full spectrum dominance. Big data and AI will only intensify existing global inequalities and expedite the development of new weapon systems. He does have a kind of, I would say, in quote, optimistic about the future because people think it's all gloom and doom. But as far as the technology, the reality will be a patchwork of competing and incompatible systems and components resulting in defectiveness, breakdowns, and inefficiencies. So, you know, praise the technological glitches as a way for humanity to not be fully dependent on the technology. Fearful anticipations of a totalizing future of digital surveillance and regulation are not only exaggerated, but are an impediment to realizing how free we are. In fact, to refuse the mandates of empire and adopt alternative ways of living. So I like that a lot, how he highlights the distraction and the deception that distract us from realizing how free we actually are to affect the system, the domination system and the technology. And he talks about assimilate human beings and nature into the structure of capitalism's productive activity, which is very much, in different words, what John Trudell talked about when he said they're mining us, in the way that the, you know, the Crusades and the Inquisition wanted to, quote, save the souls of the heathen. Well, now they're trying to mine our attention and our consciousness to fit their capitalist techno-science. And he mentions Germany as the country where the boundless possibilities of technological advance were first realized. Germany, known for its technological precision. And then he refers to the Earth system, that Western science and capitalism are saying that science will save us from its own calamitous accomplishments, notably the current unraveling of the Earth system. That's what they say. To take one of innumerable examples, the torrent of synthetic chemicals poisoning air, water, soil, oceans, and the bodies of every higher organism is certainly one of the most enduring, quote, accomplishments of capitalist technoscience. Scientists themselves, not just corporate executives, bear direct responsibility for the terminal wounding of living systems by plastics, herbicides, pesticides, and petrochemical fertilizers, as well as for the toxic impact of the 120,000 compounds increasing every month that saturate ourselves and the environment. God help us. These compounds have been produced for no other purpose than the facilitating of manufacturing and technical processes, including military applications, and for enhancing in thousands of ways the unnecessary, quote, conveniences of daily life and commerce. The global industrial complex is dependent on a continual stream of new products and is structurally incapable of limiting or regulating itself in any meaningful way. And there's the hungry ghost that I recently wrote about in a poem. The actuality of a world made into a terminal waste dump by technoscience is not an anomaly that could have been or might yet be put right. It is intrinsic to the operations of scorched earth capitalism. Another spicy phrase, the knee-jerk veneration of, quote, science. The neoliberal financialization of biological life. And then he speaks of how this is, in a way, it's a disrespect to the elders, because the elders are a structural problem for capitalism because of the relative unproductivity and diminished consumerism. So that's where the age, you know, people aging, they don't necessarily produce as much or need as much stuff. So how does that fit in with the incessant progress? And another example of the two-tier system are the life expectancy stats, which is quite startling. Several billion people in the global south have life expectancies that are two or three decades shorter than the 80-plus years of many Western nations, Japan and elsewhere. In the slums of Mumbai, Lagos, and Rio, male life expectancy is less than 40 years. From this perspective, aging is hardly a universal or inevitable experience, rather a lifestyle problem of the affluent sectors of the planet. And now in the U.S. and elsewhere, quote, deaths of despair, end quote, among people in their 30s and 40s are soaring from drugs, alcohol, and suicide, all consequences of the daily pain of poverty, debt, loneliness, and depression. And again, he mentions Mother Earth and all the relations, all his stuff, as a life removed from immersion in living environments and cut off from the primary reciprocity between human beings or between humans and animals and other species. A media and commodity-saturated reality. Philip Dick, the science fiction writer, repeatedly details the schizophrenic depersonalization resulting from the collision of the self with spaces full of useless objects and with people devoid of capacity for empathy. And a phrase from Max Weber, 1904 forecast of capitalism terminating in, quote, mechanized petrification. Mechanized petrification. And then he spends a good amount of time showing the split from the city and country, as I've mentioned in the when the publishing and the book became a division between the for the native people and the learning of from the land became then put into the books and the universities and becoming, quote, educated. And that, as Crary writes, was the repudiation and erasure of our agrarian life with all its rhythms, relationships, and forms of labor. So he goes on about that a bit, citing different stuff in the 1850s, 1870s, various books. The replacement of an animal motive power by life-destroying forms of locomotion and combustion. Post-capitalist rebuilding of biodiversity. So there's one thing where he projects to the future, a post-capitalist rebuilding of biodiversity, which is happening. People are aware of this. And again, he speaks to the indigenous ways. The extraordinary 1994 rediscovery of the Chauvet Cave in southern France with its ageless paintings of animals, including horses, can be seen at either as a random chance event or more usefully as the prophetic recovery at a moment of extreme danger of images from 30,000 years ago affirming a humanity that flourishes only through embracing its inseparability from the life world of the animal and the non-human. Our contemporary billionaire culture has its roots in 19th century images of easily amassed riches and the desires these arouse. And then he highlights the billionaire class and mentions criminals and psychopaths. So a lot of the internet, not only the billionaires and the corporations that are amassing the wealth, but also the, I'm not familiar really, but I've heard bits of about, you know, whatever goes on online and drugs and this and that, the criminal, you know, the criminal element that is using the technology as well. He has another excellent phrase, to identify what's going on, the commodified digital self, where branding is the thing. To reiterate, the wealth and power of the billionaire class are structurally interconnected with key elements of the internet complex. It is no coincidence that control of the dominant media and technology corporations are in the hands of this small elite. Most of the lucrative strategies of wealth production over the last two decades would have been inconceivable without the speeds and computational resources of advanced digital networks and some other things, but that's, you know, laundering schemes, profits from drugs, weapons, human trafficking, etc. But the I've heard that about Wall Street, where like within like a second, like deals are made within microseconds that someone gets a lead or a hit about something and makes a big deal. So that's from the technology. And then he presents the psychology that the technocrats pose, that anybody who's against it is, you know, sort of like a tree hugger wanting to return to nature. And here's what I consider one of the key bits of the chapter. One of their priorities is to prevent exploration of how existing technical capabilities could be creatively deployed by local and regional communities to meet human and environmental needs rather than exclusively serving the requirements of capital and empire. So there's, I highlighted that because that's one so far of his few mentions of the positive side of the technology. Like I've written about a long time ago, was like, you know, as much as McDonald's is garbage food, think about if McDonald's was producing, you know, farm-to-table type of food, the ability to reach lots of people in an efficient and affordable way, there is that possibility within the capitalist system to abide and serve the people. And then the other thing he talks about is the massive social unrest happening as a kind of backlash to all this control. The straw man of a solitary technophobe is an anxious fiction to conceal the mass insurgent potential of millions of low-paid workers in Amazon warehouses, Walmart's meatpackaging plants, call centers, and many other sites who are subjected to increasingly harsh regulation of their time and labor, and who also risk imminent replacement by robots. What he's talking about as the you know, societal, what he calls social disintegration happening. But the backlash of all this, some of that was seen this holiday season with some Amazon workers were striking. In a small town near me, I was going for a walk and there was two young women sitting outside the Starbucks. They were protesting, striking for higher wages and union, whatever it was. So that's some of the potential backlash. And then again, he mentions the benign and egalitarian representations of the internet. So again, a potential positive side. And wrapping up the chapter for the elites, the priority remains keep people enclosed within the augmented unrealities of the internet complex, where experience is fragmented into a kaleidoscope of fleeting claims of importance, of never-ending admonitions on how to conduct our lives, manage our bodies, what to buy and who to admire or to fear. The separation and atomization of the internet is compounded by the humiliations and belittlements of billionaire culture. And then he mentions somebody, a sociologist, Norbert Elias, writing on the estranging individualism endemic to Western modernity, he identified a human drive that was effectively trans-historical or innate. He insisted that the most basic human need, quote, was for impulsive human warmth and spontaneity in relationships with other people, whatever form it takes, the emotive need for human society, a giving and receiving in effective relationships to other people, is one of the fundamental conditions of human existence. So this is what, you know, we're fighting for, to maintain human warmth and spontaneity and the positive uses of things, the way drone, you know, technology is helping to discover some of the underground graves of the boarding schools, quote, so-called boarding schools against the natives of Turtle Island and the First Peoples up north, and other positives about technology and other interactions of, I was thinking today, of friends I've made online that I haven't even met or I've met once, and the ability to maintain and communicate and work together. So that's some of the positive side, but I think Crary's book is certainly highlighting that we need to face the downsides and even look beyond, you know, even have, I call it now my off-the-grid consciousness, where I, you know, spend time just, you know, contemplating walks, looking out the window. Sometimes when I'm driving, I turn off my cell phone and I feel like I'm back in the 1980s or something. And it's actually kind of refreshing. I get memories of relatives and things that were done and good times that were shared. And I realize, wait a minute, a good part of me is nurtured pre-internet. So that's something I think is important for everyone to stay in touch with. And especially tricky for the generations that are growing up smack in the middle of the technology, because that can be a lack of reference point. So to sum up, nurture the natural rhythms, the community, relationships, human warmth, spontaneity, rebuilding of diversity as a way to balance and override the technocratic bureaucracy, technologic, whatever other labels put on that technological system of domination that is attempting to corral us, as was mentioned in the previous part, in a kind of welcome to the internet reservation. So reach out, and if you have any good ideas, electronic mail me. Thank you so much for listening. Be well, and blessings of the season and for the upcoming new year to you and all your friends and family and all the beings of this earth.